I'd say the very first thing I have to give credit to is the gay rights movement. Another thing I would have to credit is just the whole process, and the gay rights movement, I think, encouraged this and stimulated this, but there were courageous individuals who began coming out as gay and lesbian so that biased people and, you know, bigoted people began to encounter real human beings that were gay. Almost everyone now knows, you know, has a gay son or daughter or aunt or uncle or brother or sister or friend, you know, or loved one. And so if you know and love people, it's much harder to hold on to negative attitudes. And you want them to be happy and to have all the things that you have, including the right to have a loving, committed partnership and marriage.
Marriage equality is the buzzword of the moment, but there have been many things that have gotten us to the point where that has become legal. You've been a part of organizing and were an activist in the early days of this movement. Can you tell me a little bit about what that was like? And I also want to talk about the tactics and strategies that you guys used in the beginning to organize.
The gay rights movement in general existed in every big city, probably in most college towns. From the 60s, there would, you know, be an organization, and they went by various names, you know, in different places. But they began, of course, in the late 60s, early 70s, realizing that laws needed to be changed, that gay people were being arrested just for being gay. You know, there was just employment discrimination, housing, you know, as well as just actual physical violence happening. And so we in Illinois began organizing to change laws, and I think in towns at first. In Urbana and Champaign, we worked to get ordinances through our city councils that were non-discrimination ordinances. And then out of that movement on the local level, in Illinois I'm specifically talking about, groups rose up in big cities, Peoria, Chicago, Champaign, Urbana, Bloomington, that were working together and creating a statewide organization that had many different names. It was Equality Illinois and, you know, Equal Rights Illinois. It had different names over time. But they used the traditional tactics, this larger group, what I'd call the traditional tactics of lobbying, electoral politics, trying to get pro-gay rights legislators and, you know, local politicians, in the case of these city ordinances, elected, and then lobbying these people, what I'd call more traditional tactics for advocating, you know, for change. And there were a number of us that were involved in that effort. I mean, we were very much, you know, going to Springfield, talking to legislators, writing letters to the editor, writing to our legislators, that decided we needed some more dramatic tactics, A, to bring the issue to public awareness and public consciousness. And that's what civil disobedience and marches and rallies and more dramatic things do, is they bring attention to the issue in a way that the very necessary day-to-day slogging for, you know, legislative change doesn't get the attention. So in 1999, a group of us in Champaign-Urbana formed a statewide group that we call the 85% Coalition to do direct action, it's called, or, you know, civil disobedience, sit-ins, guerrilla theater, you know, pageants in the rotunda at the State House and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And we were, you know, I think we were not mimicked, they weren't copying us, but it rose up similar things in other states where more dramatic rallies and marches all led to movement.
Now that the state has legalized same-sex marriage, legal things will change for couples, but there's also a social layer that's a part of that. Can you talk about what that acceptance means? Oh. Why is it meaningful?
Oh, my gosh. It's just, it's part of the whole coming out of the closet. It's part of the freedom to just be yourself, not hide, because that's an experience every gay person no matter how out there they are, they've had to hide in many situations. And there's something about lying and hiding that I think is not good for your spirit or your mental health. Just to be freedom, to be open and who you are and have it be acknowledged and not have to suppress the pronouns. And like, I'm in an exercise class with older women, and I just am freely talking, and they've come to accept it, and they'll ask me about it. I went through years where no one ever asked me anything at my work, and these were very nice, open, liberal people, but it's that hidden thing that just has your relationship be invisible, and you don't get the support when there's any issues or illness, or, you know, because people don't know about it.
So this has been a long process. You mentioned, you know, some of the organizing in Illinois started as far back as the early 70s.
Yes.
It's still not over. There have already been groups in Illinois, for example, who have said that they want legislators who voted yes on this bill out of office after the next election. What comes next? How will groups strategize and organize to try and keep pushing forward?
They'll use pretty much the same methods that are always used in political movements. And of course, that's education. That's when there are attempts to undo things in the legislature, you know, because there'll be many bills introduced to limit it or to do something that takes away some rights. Like, I was just reading the Washington Post, an opponent from an organization that had marriage in the title, and I can't think of his name, but he said he had no argument against gay marriage at all. His only argument against this bill was it was going to lead to persecution of people who oppose gay marriage. Believe me, it's a constant struggle.